Welcome back to Through the Word and Daniel chapter 11. There is nothing else anywhere, not in any other holy book, not in any history books, not even anywhere else in the Bible, quite like Daniel 11. In one chapter, we have 135 specific and detailed prophecies covering 375 years of future history. Well, it was future at the time it was written. It's distant past now, covering 536 to 167 BC. If chapter 2 was the puzzle box top, 11 is the thousand-piece puzzle. Now, the big question here is when. When was this book really written? If you missed the study on dating Daniel, please go back to that. Back in chapter 11, a little context. The year is 536 BC. We know that from chapter 10, the third year of King Cyrus. Time was accounted by the years of each king's reign, and most of the prophecy ahead will follow king by king. Don't miss that. This whole book is about kings and kingdoms. Chapter 10 ended with an angel about to tell Daniel what is written in the book of truth. In chapters 11 and 12, the angel delivers, and the prophecies begin at Daniel's present day. In verse 2, the angel says, "Now then, I tell you the truth." Notice the word truth again. "Three more kings will arise in Persia, and then a fourth, who will be far richer than all the others. When he has gained power by his wealth, he will stir up everyone against the kingdom of Greece." How does the prophecy match up with history? Perfectly. The four kings who followed Cyrus were Cambyses, Smerdis, Darius I, and then Xerxes, who was indeed far richer than all the others. You may remember him from Esther's story. And just as the verse states, Xerxes invaded Greece. That brings us to 480 BC, 56 years after the prophecy. Now, there is so much detail here, so I'm going to go in fast-forward mode a bit. Verse 3 predicts a mighty king next, with great power. That's Alexander the Great of Greece, who defeated Persia and ruled a huge empire. We're at 336 BC, 2 centuries future, and verse 4 tells us that Alexander's empire will be broken up and parceled out toward the four winds of heaven. Sure enough, Greece was split, and it did not go to his descendants, just as prophesied, but it went to his generals instead. Now, the prophecy is only going to follow two of those kingdoms, to the north and south. A map helps a lot here. Search online for Map of Greek Empire after Alexander. Pause if you want to look now. So, here in Daniel 11, south refers to Egypt and the kings known as the Ptolemies, with a silent P like pterodactyl, only not a flying dinosaur. North refers to Syria and the extensive kingdom of the Seleucids. Those northern kings were often called Antiochus, and still not flying dinosaurs. So why is the focus all on these two kingdoms? Well, check the map. Israel is right between Syria and Egypt, and those two kingdoms will march back and forth across Israel. Remember, this prophecy was for Israel, to know that God saw it all coming, and Israel is at the center of God's big plan for the world. Okay, verse 6 gets very detailed. "The daughter of the king of the south will go to the king of the north to make an alliance." That was Berenice, daughter of Ptolemy II. We're at 250 BC, and Berenice married Antiochus II up north, who was already married to Laodice. He divorced Laodice, married Berenice, and the alliance worked, for a time. Back in verse 6, "But she will not retain her power. She will be betrayed." Sure enough, Antiochus waited for Ptolemy's death, then dumped Berenice to take back Laodice. Laodice returned to power, killed her husband in revenge, along with Berenice and her royal escort and child, exactly as the verse predicts. That brings us to 246 BC, 290 years into the future. And remember from our last study on dating Daniel, we are now passing the date of the Septuagint translation that included Daniel. But why does God predict the future? Remember again from Isaiah 46. This is the key. I am God, and there is no other. I am God, and there is none like me. I make known the end from the beginning, from ancient times what is still to come. I say my purpose will stand, and I will do all that I please. God sets himself apart by this. Only he can proclaim the end from the beginning. And he tells us, remember this, fix it in mind, take it to heart. So let's fix it in our minds and get back to more prophecy. Okay, back in Egypt, verse 7 predicts one from Berenice's family will take her place. That would be her brother, Ptolemy III. It says that he will attack and enter the northern fortress. And indeed, he conquered Antioch. Verse 8 predicts he will seize their gods. And he did just that, stole their idols and valuables. And he stole back some idols that were stolen from Egypt years before. And he carried them all to Egypt. Just a tip, if your gods can be stolen, you need a bigger god. Still true today, pleasure, success, money can all be taken from you. Now verse 10 moves to 223 BC, now 310 years future, and Antiochus III up north assembling a great army and sweeping like a flood as far as his fortress. These are the Syrian wars, and the fortress is at Raphia in the Holy Land near Gaza. Verse 11 describes the famous Battle of Raphia, one of the largest in ancient history. Ptolemy IV won for the south, but the victory didn't last, just as predicted. We're at 217 BC now, and all these words had been written in Hebrew and rolled up in scrolls for 319 years already. Verse 13 predicts the north's comeback. That's 203 BC. And verse 14 says many Jews would join in. It happened, and young Ptolemy V was defeated. Verse 15 predicts the Battle of Panium, and 16 predicts the conquest of the beautiful land, Israel. That was under Antiochus III, around 200 BC, and Israel would remain under the Northern Empire until 63, when Rome took over. This part is important. The prophecy is for Israel, and they need to know that kings and kingdoms will come and go, but the kingdom of God stands forever. Remember, this started with a vision, I believe, of Jesus glorified. Just like Revelation, it starts and ends with Jesus. Verse 17 predicts a deceptive alliance formed when Antiochus's daughter marries Ptolemy V. Her name was Cleopatra, but not the movie one. Cleopatra was sent to spy, but the deception backfired when she chose husband over dad. 18 and 19 predict the death of Antiochus III, and that brings Rome into the picture. Then Seleucus III is prophesied, along with his notorious tax collector, Heliodorus. Are you dizzy yet? And verse 21 brings us to the notorious king, Antiochus Epiphanes. And there we pause. We'll save the last king for tomorrow. For today, read up to verse 20, and don't miss the big picture. Kings and kingdoms come and go. Deception and wars pass to and fro. But the kingdom of God, of the only God who tells the end from the beginning, his kingdom stands forever. He is God, and there is no other. He is God, and there is none like him.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.